Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Scales of Truth. I'm Tyson Harley. This is a quick rant of truth. I'm going to give you a quote. Some of you guys will understand the significance of this very, very clear language, and then we'll go back into it to understand background. So listen to this. This is a quote from an investigation, or rather a review. The decision to seek this to use this highly intrusive investigative technique was known and approved at multiple levels of the Department of Justice, including by then DAG Yates for the initial FISA application and first renewal, and by then Acting Attorney General Buente, and then DAG Rosenstein for the second and third renewals, respectively. However, as we explain later, the Crossfire Hurricane team failed to inform Department of Justice officials of significant information that was available to the team at the time that the FISA applications were drafted and filed. Much of that information was inconsistent with or undercut the assertions contained in the FISA applications that were used to support probable cause, and in some instances resulted in inaccurate information being included in the applications. While we do not speculate whether Department of Justice officials would have authorized the FBI to seek to use FISA authority had they been made aware of all relevant information, it was clearly the responsibility of Crossfire Hurricane team members to advise them of such critical information so that they could make a fully informed decision. Okay, that came from a review from the Office of Inspector General of the Department of Justice. This review is called, let's see here. I have it right here. I just didn't quite scroll to the right spot. Review of four FISA applications and other aspects of the FBI's Crossfire Hurricane investigation. Give you a little bit of background and then just repeat that quote. And then we'll go into more details in different episodes. This is December 19 revised. And so this was around when Crossfire Hurricane was opened sometime in 16 based on a friendly foreign government information. So it was open as a preliminary investigation and then later a permanent investigation. And when it was opened, it was around March of 16. And yet by the time the information is known that says we have contradictions here, that was no later than January of 17, the very month that Trump was inaugurated. And then he goes, hey, can you look into this? And remember, that was a thing. He's trying to influence the Department of Justice. And at that time, they didn't really need to look into it. They literally had enough information to say, yeah, this information, and they'd had that information already, I believe, before January 17. But I could be wrong. Certainly, some of the information was contradictory. But the main person that I'm going to tell you about, That definitely happened no later than January 17. The background is, this is these FISA applications, this Crossfire Hurricane investigation, or what looked into the Trump campaign to see whether they wittingly or unwittingly were delving into, you know, foreign influence by Russia, including four particular campaign members, Carter Page, Papadopoulos, or whatever his name is, Paul Manafort, and somebody else. And so these four FISA applications were around that. As we know, the Steele dossier was a main part of this, and it has been entirely discredited. Now, whether or not there's other foreign collusion, maybe, maybe not, but the Steele dossier itself, entirely discredited. Remember how suddenly we worried about foreign influence when we hadn't for 25 years since the Clintons first started in the campaign business, and clear and obvious foreign collusion had happened over and over and over again, starting with the Buddhist monks who were foreign nationals in California, and Al Gore, and the Lincoln bedroom and all these types of things. But in this case, we suddenly did believe that foreign influence was important. And I agree, that's a good idea. It's just ironic that we suddenly cared and it was the biggest deal, like the biggest deal, until, of course, coronavirus was mentioned every second millisecond. It sure seemed like it was the biggest deal. So, remember the Steele dossier. The irony is, of course, that all of a sudden foreign influence is a big deal. When the FBI was first told of this, via just some information from a friendly foreign government. That's the term used in this investigation as background. And then also the Steele dossier, Christopher Steele, a former foreign agent, British agent. And then we find out via John Durham documentation and others, this is what got me to check into this, John Durham investigating a Russian national named Igor, either Danchenko or Dushenko, I forget which at the top of my head. He's being charged with 5 counts of lying. And he is a Russian national that we now know was the primary subsource of Steele. Now, Steele didn't know any of this. He was given hearsay. And if you don't believe me, well, you can go look at the background documents and maybe even this document, I forget, we'll cover it later, that says the Department of Justice said, can you corroborate this, Steele? This is pretty heavy. Can you corroborate it? We'll give you $50,000 to corroborate it, because it just seems like a bunch of stories here. Yeah, you're right. It's a bunch of stories. I'll try to corroborate it. Oh, I can't. Oh, you can't? I can't. Okay, well, you don't get the $50,000 in. But nonetheless, we find out, and through this, maybe Durham documents, maybe this one, that Danchenko also says, yeah, Steele wanted me to corroborate it. I couldn't corroborate it. So we know that the primary subsource, and that's how he's referred to, and discovered that that's who we mean later on after we kind of connected the dots. Danchenko is the primary subsource who was interviewed early by the FBI. And the primary subsource says, Steele, I don't know why he said that. It was nowhere near as certain as that. And the general pattern was this. The general pattern was Danchenko, the primary subsource, disagreed in major ways with the way Steele characterized things in his dossier. His dossier was a number of reports. And as to this report, you know, the primary subsource, Danchenko or Dushenko, says, that's not what I told him. And that took a couple of different forms. Nowhere near as solid as I told him. No, I said that I got in a text. I didn't say that it was specifically a certain Kremlin insider. So that was one of them that Steele just pasted on to what Danchenko said, more certainty as to the source. And this is even though the NSA said, or not NSA, the CIA said, man, this seems like internet rumor to us. And a specific person said, hey, why wouldn't you figure this is potentially just very political? Because Steele was hired for oppositional research, his group was, by the Clinton campaign or those associated with it, depending on which way you want to say it, I forget which. But that's a solid and obvious information. This was oppositional research. Well, oppositional research that downs a sitting president, or comes close to it, tries to, by the Loserville candidate who didn't win, and yet afterwards they get to continue to try to parry and damage the president that did win, instead of letting him try to actually administer once he's inaugurated. So we know this is oppositional research, so then you go, well, gee, why did it not match what Danchenko said? Did Steele just want to throw it in there? Or did somebody else throw the extra information in there? Oh, yeah, I was a Kremlin insider. That's not what I said. Danchenko says, that's not what I said. I told you I got a text message. Oh, what about the person at the hotel? Oh, a specific longtime employee at the hotel, a primary and longtime employee at the hotel. That's not what I said. I got a text message. And the second part of the pattern that Danchenko said was, he's naming these things, Steele, as though that one of the sources came up with that conclusion. No, that was just him and I analyzing, basing on what these other things are. We speculate that. That's our analysis and speculation. That's not one of the subsources that's closer to the true facts of the thing saying, I know enough to tell you that this is the situation that's going on. So they misinformed as to the conclusion. So those are two giant differences between the Steele dossier and the Danchenko testimony, which was known at the time the very first FISA warrant was put into play that allowed all this spying and that allegedly came up with, oh, look what we found that seemed to be tricky and all this stuff. So with that, I'm going to read this one more time since you have some of that background. This again is the Department of Justice Office of Inspector General going, man, some funky things happen. We should look into this. And we are not going to question judgment. I'm not going to read you that, but there is a section that says, if it was within discretion and within judgment, we're not going to question it. If we would have done it different based on the certain facts, if we would have taken a different strategy, that's not what we're questioning. We're questioning whether or not something violated law or policy or guidelines, and we'll say which, and or if an act went through with bad information or with incomplete information. I'm paraphrasing, but those are the standards that they say outright in this report that's some 495 pages, something like that. Over 400, not quite 500 pages. I've gone through about 50, but this conclusory, this summarizing statement is in, you know, a summary that's pretty long. But it's the first big dramatic one that's a summary conclusion. So we'll read it one more time and then we'll let you go and maybe get into some of those details on future episodes. The decision to use this highly intrusive investigative technique was known and approved at multiple levels. I'm not telling you what that one was because it's not really important. I'm just going to read you the whole paragraph so you hear it. Including by then DAG Yates for the initial FISA application and first renewal. And it may just mean to use the FISA court warrants. And I forget what that means, foreign whatever committee. Where you can do this a little bit more obtrusive warrant or it applies in certain situations. So starting again, including by then DAG Yates for the initial FISA application and first renewal, and by then Acting Attorney General Bowente and then DAG Rosenstein for the second and third renewals respectively. However, as we explain later, the Crossfire Hurricane Team failed to inform Department of Justice officials of significant information that was available to the team at the time that the FISA applications were drafted and filed. Much of that information was inconsistent with or undercut the assertions contained in the FISA applications that were used to support probable cause and in some instances resulted in inaccurate information being included in the applications. While we do not speculate whether department officials would have authorized the FBI to seek to use FISA authority had they been made aware of all relevant information, it was clearly the responsibility of Crossfire Hurricane team members to advise them of such critical information so that they could make a fully informed decision. So clearly malfeasance at the very least, not informing people who are making very big important decisions of a lack of corroboration and then specifically disagreement in major relevant ways that may have said, well, no, we don't need a warrant at this time then. If your two main sources and the one closest or at least not as far removed in hearsay terms says it's a lot less of a case than what the other guy says.
Those reports are real nice, but he's one degree removed and doesn't even agree in major substantive ways with his primary subsource. So then you have to go, why didn't they include that? Well, why did Steele add the extra stuff? How much of this was political? And regardless of whether it was political, the point is that the FBI misinformed decision makers that then allowed this thing to continue well past where it should have ever gone. I should allow it to continue to steps and then allowed it to live well past where it ever should have gone. We'll get into details of some of these irrelevancies and contradictions, and in some cases, just straight misinformation. Again, note this one phrase. In some instances, resulted in inaccurate information being included in the applications. For instance, after they don't point out the Dyshenko information, they also say, "Well, this isn't a lot of information, but the reason that we trust Steele, such as he is, even though this is a political investigation, is that we've relied on him in the past for non-political situations, and it was corroborated, and it appeared in court. And in fact," don't quote me on this because I don't have it right in front of me, but it's one or the other. "It was not corroborated, or it was minimally corroborated, and it never appeared in court," for instance. Like, that statement sounds very strong. Well, we believe in him as a major source. But what they don't say is that Carter Page is a source at the time, and yet that's the person who is at suspicion. At a source of a parallel agency at the time, and they trust him. So all kinds of shenanigans and nonsense underneath that were kept out of the application to specifically misinform, one would think. Why wouldn't you have put that there? But regardless of whether it was kept out to specifically misinform, it did specifically misinform and therefore gave the impression of a much stronger, or at least left out the impression of the thing, of the facts that would have made it seem weaker, application for this major investigative warrant. All right, guys, thanks for listening.